From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The medium is the message, wrote 60s culture guru Marshall McLuhan. Master the medium and you master the message. No one seems to know that better than the Bush administration. From the moment George W. Bush took office, his tight-lipped staffers have been masters of the tight shot. The Bush presidency is one of carefully staged, indelible images. The president in front of the Statue of Liberty, on the deck of an aircraft carrier, on the ranch in Crawford. But behind every image, there's a policy, a plan, and a well-oiled news management machine. And the mainstream media, critics charge, is too happy to ride along. This is the era of 24/7 cable coverage, packaged stories, and pundits that pad airtimes around ads, they say. Hard-hitting or skeptical news coverage just rocks the boat. In an America threatened by terror, tenacious reporters and tough questions could come across as unpatriotic or unprofitable. Quote, the sound emanating from network headquarters, says one of our guests tonight, is the sound of suits walking on eggshells. So are you getting what you need to know without fear or favor? Tonight on Point, news and news management in the Bush era. We begin tonight with a look inside the Bush communications operation at the team and strategy the White House has for news management. Earlier, I spoke with Martha Joint Kumar, professor of political science at Towson University in Towson, Maryland. She tracks presidential press relations. I asked her to sum up the news management style and goals of this administration.
Republican administrations tend to have a particular style to them, and I think the Bush administration fits into it, and that is to think through their policy, politics, and publicity all together. They bring them together and think when they want to put in a particular initiative, what the politics of it are going to be, and what the publicity should be. And so what that means is that they favor their communications operation, put their resources there, and use the daily press operation as one where they're sending out the message that is going to relate to their overall communications planning. So planning has been important in all of the Republican administrations in the post-World War II period, except for Bush I.
Planning meaning that they want to think through in advance every aspect of how they're going to roll something out. Wouldn't any administration want to do that?
In a Republican administration, because management is so important, they're able to do it in a way that Democratic ones tend not to be. Republican administrations put a lot of effort into the overall communications. You can plan it out beforehand, but when you get here, it's very hard because of the events that crop up on you each day to stick to it.
Is President Bush very engaged in this planning of how messages will be put out and news will be made?
In a larger sense, yes. When an administration comes in, it does not make the errors of the administration that preceded it. That's one of its rules, and I think in their case, what they've done is to make sure that they do not make the same mistakes that his father made in his administration.
Those being, in this administration's mind?
In the communications in particular, that they have a vision of where they're going, and they have a plan for how to communicate it. In post-Cold War world, communications for a president is a little more difficult than it was earlier.
Why is that?
Because you don't have the same kind of clear enemy that you had. It was, you know, us versus them, the United States versus the Soviet Union, and the president could do a lot off of that.
Martha Joint Kumar, you've spent time in the White House press facilities watching as the White House press corps responds to this tightly planned and strategic and managed news process. Does it change the quality of information that Americans get out of this White House, this administration?
It means that for reporters, it's more difficult to cover. It's more difficult to get to the story. Part of the story for reporters is covering what it is that the president does and the initiatives he puts forward. That information they do get, although they get less than was the case in the Clinton administration. They put out a lot of policy information on a regular basis. The economic advisors would come to the podium in the briefing room.
This is during the Clinton years.
Yes, and explain their policies. In this administration, they do very little of that. that means that reporters have to go elsewhere for information. And one of the consequences of that for a White House can be that the story they get elsewhere is not the kind of story that the White House really wants to get out.
So is there more or less candor in this administration, or is there ever candor from a White House?
I think once you have a televised briefing, there's a lot less candor. Because in the era when a press secretary could speak off the record or on background from the podium, you did get some more candor.
And you write about the president wanting to win the picture, winning the picture. What does that mean exactly? Is the aircraft carrier deck landing an example of that?
I think it is. They believe that people get their news from television, and that's borne out in statistics. And at the same time, they also think that people have a television on and see it only in passing, that they don't sit down and really concentrate on what is in the news unless it's something that's big that they want to focus on. So therefore, White House has to be prepared to try to influence the public when it pays little attention. And that was true even in the Clinton administration. Mm-hmm. They were interested in winning the picture as well. But in this administration, they work right down to what is in that picture, the wallpaper that is behind the president that will, in a catchy phrase, explain what is what he's talking
theme of the
about
day,
today,
mm-hmm.
like corporate responsibility. Mm-hmm. In the case of the aircraft carrier, they worked it down to an interesting picture of having, you know, what time of day it was so that they have the right lighting. Mm-hmm. Then behind him, you could see people in different colored uniforms.
So it was visually interesting.
That's right.
What about at the level of this administration's success in guiding or controlling the national conversation? How would you rate the Bush administration?
They have been able to do that, but part of it is that once September 11th came, there was going to be a focus on terrorism and how to handle it. And more focus came to the White House, that the megaphone that he has was that much more powerful, that they didn't have to go out and get attention. The attention was already here, and what they had to do was be very, very careful about how they used it and what they said.
What about the White House press corps itself? Have you found that it's aggressively questioning Bush administration policies? You said earlier that they have to go out and find the information themselves. It's not dished up to them. Are they doing that?
No, I think they really do go out and work at getting the story. I think one of the reasons that this White House operation has looked as good as it is that the Democrats have done a fairly poor job of presenting an alternate picture. And what happens is that news organizations and reporters often get blamed for not providing alternate information, an alternate picture, when that is not their responsibility. The press corps is not the opposition. The opposition is the political parties, the Democrats. They are the ones that are responsible for presenting an alternate picture. The news media is responsible for getting accurate information on a timely basis.
Ari Fleischer, of course, has announced that he will be resigning. How would you describe Ari Fleischer as a White House spokesman and his imprint on the news and news management of the first couple of years of the Bush administration?
Fleischer is doing exactly what his boss wanted, which was to come out and provide the information that they were interested in getting out at the time that they wanted to release it. The difficulty, though, for press secretary is that he has to deal with more than just his boss. He really has three constituents, a president, the White House staff, and news organizations. In terms of representing the interests of them to each other, a press secretary is in the position of having to convince people in the White House staff that they should be forthcoming with information. They're often in a position of having to persuade the president and senior staff that the president should have more sessions with news organizations, that he should have more press conferences or short question and answer sessions. And that's not something that we can see, that role as a representative. What we see is the role as an information conduit. And for that, it's been frustrating for reporters because they don't get the information they want. But that's not Fleischer's decision. That's a decision of the president and others on his staff.
Martha Joint Kumar, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Tom.
Martha Joint Kumar is professor of political science at Towson University. Her article, Communications Operations in the White House of President George W. Bush, Making News on His Terms, will appear in the June issue of Presidential Studies Quarterly. She spoke with us from the offices of the White House Press Corps in Washington. We're talking tonight about news, news management, and the Bush era. How do you rate the Bush team's handling of the news? What is the character and quality of the national conversation being supported by the news media today by the White House. You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is Todd Gitlin, professor of journalism, culture, and sociology at New York University, and author of Media Unlimited, How the Torrent of Images and Sounds Overwhelms Our Lives. His recent article, Embed or Inbed, The War, the Media, and the Truth, appears in the June issue of The American Prospect. Good evening and welcome, Todd Gitlin.
Hi, thanks, but a correction. I'm at Columbia University.
I'm very sorry. I've got a bad script here.
Yes.
At Columbia, of course. Todd Gitlin, step back and take the big picture with us here. I guess I'll put the same question to you. What is your sense of how the quality and character of the national conversation, if we can describe something as broad as that, is being shaped by this White House and the news media around this White House?
Well, I certainly agree with your previous guest that the White House is adept at framing the matter in a simplistic, formulaic way. But I do not exempt the press from complicity in this feeble exercise in public information. The press is unwilling to step outside the shadow that's cast by the administration. Look, if the administration lies and falsifies in minor and major ways and refuses to deliver information, is it the job of journalists to simply report that what the administration said when it's very clear that they're in the business of disguising the truth? No. I mean, this is a stenographer's work, not a journalist's work.
So give us
journalists are responsible for bringing forward what they learn, and it's their obligation to learn about the shortcomings. An example from the recent war. We now know, and there's no dispute, that the administration's claim that the Saddam Hussein government was in the business of trying to buy uranium from the African nation of Niger was false.
This was bogus intelligence that got passed around and identified as such before it was used.
Well, it's worse than bogus. It's almost certainly, I think it's fair to say it's certainly a forgery. The reason
concoction.
I say that, and this was reported by Seymour Hersh in The New Yorker and reported by others, is that the document which is said to be the smoking memo on the basis of which this claim is made contains false information. That is to say, they claim that various officials of the government of Niger are in office when they have their numbers, they have their dates wrong.
And here's information that the Bush administration reportedly knew to be incorrect at the time that it used it to justify war in Iraq. Are you saying this is an example? Is this illustrative of what?
This is illustrative of the news media's, I'm talking about the everyday news medium, not Cy Hirsch writing for The New Yorker, but everyday television, everyday newspapers, failure to bring forward the fact that here was one central claim made by Bush in the State of the Union address and then repeated on various other occasions. It is a falsehood.
So why should the news media be complicit, if that's the right word, or just lazy or neglectful? You put the word on it.
Oh, they all know. They all know that this was a falsehood.
So why? What interest do they have in not bringing forward, might they have in not bringing forward the facts?
Number one, during the war itself, they were enthralled by the pictures, by the possibility of broadcasting from the desert.
But this is pre-war we're talking.
Yes, the claim was pre-war.
Yes.
The revelation about the falsity, the forgery of the Niger document.
So don't rain on the
came
parade.
During the war itself.
Yeah.
But the second thing is that they, I think, are fearful of crossing the administration. I think that ABC in particular, which has been the most forthright in its reporting, is also the one that is most fearful of the what's sitting on its right shoulder.
That is?
What's sitting on its right shoulder is Fox News and Fox News' fanatics and the Republican Congress that is and Republican-appointed Federal Communications Commission.
Todd Gitlin, hold it right there.
We'll
come back and look at this fear factor issue. We're talking about news management in the Bush era, what we hear, what we don't, and why. You can join the conversation. What's the character and quality of the national conversation being supported by the news business today, by the White House? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about news management in the Bush era, what we hear, what we don't, and why. You can join the conversation. What is the character and quality of the national conversation being supported by the news media today, by the White House today? How would you describe the Bush administration approach to managing news? And how would you describe the media's approach to covering news in the George W. Bush era? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest tonight is Todd Gitlin, professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University and author of Media Unlimited. We are joined now from Washington by Marvin Kalb, senior fellow at the Shorenstein Center on the Press, Politics, and Public Policy, reporter for 30 years with CBS and NBC News, was chief diplomatic correspondent in Moscow and host of Meet the Press, and on and on. Good evening and welcome, Marvin Kalb.
Good evening, Tom. Nice to be with you.
It's wonderful to have you. Marvin Kalb, just before the break, Todd Gitlin was describing what he sees, and Todd, you're going to have to come in here if I mischaracterize, but at the very least, as a news media that somehow has become inflicted with a fear factor in the Bush administration years, that it is not fully and forthrightly putting the news out there. Do you see that dynamic?
Well, I can see where Todd could say that and feel that he's right in saying it, because there are a lot of times when that certainly seems to be the case. But I would put it a little differently. I think that there is not a fear factor as such. I don't think that journalism is now afraid of the Bush administration. But I do think that the administration is doing a fantastic job of managing the news. And they've done this. This is not the first time an administration has tried to do it. It is simply that the Bush administration does it a lot better than a number of the predecessors.
And how does the American news media deal with supremely adept news management? Is it up to seeing through that kind of sophistication?
No, I think they can see through it. I think they understand exactly what's happening, but that doesn't mean you can turn things around. It doesn't mean that you can stand up there and saying, I am manipulated.
Why not? Why not?
Well, because if you say that, what is it accomplished? What is it accomplished?
I mean, you know, we're throwing the doors open tonight, but I guess it would at least accomplish pointing to a factor in the national conversation, if indeed that news management skill is such a factor, Marvin.
No, but it doesn't seem to me that you're making any news when you say that an administration is trying to manipulate the news.
Mm-hmm.
They've been trying to do this forever and a day.
In every administration.
Some of the administrations do it better than others. The Carter administration tried, but didn't do it as well as the Nixon administration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Nixon administration fell flat on its face when it attempted to over manage the news.
Mm-hmm.
These people at the moment are more or less succeeding in with their management of the news. But this is not, for example, would you say, and now I'm asking a question.
Okay, go for it. You're a journalist.
Would you say that the embedded journalist was a product of managed news? I would say yes. But it is at the same time something that the journalist did well. The journalist appreciated, the American public appreciated, and the Pentagon appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Todd Gitlin, respond to this overall characterization of a supremely skilled news management administration, and so it's just a fact of life.
Well, I think we've gone past management. I think management is a euphemism. These people are deceivers. Sometimes they deceive by lying, as they did about the Niger incident, sometimes by a pattern of omission. And then I think for journalists to refrain from pointing the finger at this is for them to be complicit in and servile. And then one's congratulations to the administration for its competence turns into a an act of employeeship, if I may invent a word. That is to say that the journalists, by failing to point the finger, are simply character, sort of extras that have been cast by central casting to perform a role as carriers of misunderstanding. I can't see that this is a discharge of journalistic responsibility. I mean, if you ever have a chance to see a press conference where you know the reporters see through Fleischer's garbage, and even to the point of laughing when he makes certain claims, and then you watch the evening news that night, where suddenly everybody is very serious and earnest. Ari Fleischer said today, where they know that what Ari Fleischer said today was nonsense.
Marvin Kalb, how about it? Is there such a thing as news management of such exquisite skill that it becomes, I don't know, a threat to the functioning of the press itself and thereby a threat to the democracy?
Yeah, well, I suppose you could say that, if you truly believe it, and I have a feeling that Todd does, that is an honest expression of his view. I don't think that he's right, but it's an honest expression of his view.
But look, it's not just my view that I
don't think that the American newspaper people and the network people are a bunch of patsies who are sitting around there listening to everything that Ari Fleischer says and simply putting it out that way. That means that a lot of people aren't listening to the news. There's a lot of criticism. A lot of criticism. There was criticism even during the war itself. But that doesn't mean that the reporter, is in bed with the administration. So, I don't see that. I don't think that is the case at all.
Marvin Kalb, then looking back over the years, over administrations, and the tenor of discomfort that you can hear rumbling around about the news management today and the news Americans are getting today,
yes.
Do you see this as just in line with what we've always had in every administration, or is there a new tenor, is there a new substance to the complaint?
Well, they get better at it. Look,
they being the politicians.
Administrations, I mean, I remember very well the Kennedy administration and the way in which they would, quote, manipulate the news. But after a while, people understood what was going on. A number of people sounded off. They were cut out of the loop for a while. Then they were brought back in. The Nixon administration, they were absolutely awful in the way in which some of these efforts at manipulation took place. I mean, they would put people like me on an enemies list or break into my office or, you know, wiretap my phone at home. They do all kinds of outrageous things. And when you found out about that, any effort on their part to manage the news failed.
Todd Gitlin, what then? Are we just in a sort of standard pendulum swing of news management? Is there an inevitable writing that's going to go on here? Are you confident of that, Todd?
I think what Marvin is saying is that insofar as administrations are tricky and deceptive, they're going to get away with it, and journalists are going to let them get away with it because to fight hard to resist it would be to become opinionated, to become party-free, to become a factor in the story. And that means that the liars will win. I find this extremely chilling. The fact of the story about Niger and the fabrication of the claim that Saddam Hussein was buying uranium, this is not just a matter of my opinion.
But Marvin Kalb raises the Nixon administration, and of course Watergate followed, and Nixon did not win.
Nixon won on the big questions. You know, Nixon pursued a secret war that some journalists knew about, was very little reported.
What was the secret war?
The war in Cambodia.
That war was reported on endlessly,
very little,
Todd.
Very little.
Oh.
But Todd, are you suggesting that there is a new degree of management that is somehow damaging the information flow, the news flow?
I think there's a new degree of cynicism. I think that the administration, well, okay, Nick, it's not completely unprecedented. It is Nixonian. Nixon was the pioneer of this method. But what we've, I think, learned is that what the administrations have learned is that they can, by stonewalling, they can get away with it. As long as they haven't committed a flagrant felony, they can get away with it. Nixon would have gotten away with the war, the unacknowledged and lied about war in Cambodia, had it not been for the third-rate burglary.
Todd Gitlin, Marvin Kelb, stand by. A lot of callers want to join us. I want to invite them in. Dana's calling from South Wellfleet, Massachusetts. Hi, Dana. You're on the air.
Hi. Good evening, all. I believe Noam Chomsky called this manufactured consent, and it has run through most of the administrations I know about, and I will credit the W administration with one thing. They are masters at this. I mean, W lied about, and Clinton lied about an illicit affair, and the whole machinery of government was brought down on him. He got impeached for it. W has lied about everything from his military record to national security issues and the reasons for invading Iraq. And, where's the so-called liberal press, including Publican Radio? I mean,
Dana, we've got the nut of it, and thank you for your call. Marvin Kalb, you hear the complaint here, and I'm curious, having listened to the conversation about the press for many years, whether you hear a different tenor to this complaint. There are charges of lying that fly around. Paul Krugman in the New York Times it seems like every other column accusing the Bush administration of lying. New Republic issue just came in today. He's still lying. Is there a different degree here in your mind, or is this
I mean, you mentioned the New Republic. You mentioned Paul Krugman, who was an extraordinarily effective columnist, but very anti-Bush. I mean, this is all well known.
Right out there on the sleeve.
Yeah, I mean, he's very anti-Bush, but I don't know that particularly proves anything. It proves that there are antis, and then you can get the pros.
But Marvin, you've forgotten your own book. You wrote an extremely telling book about the way in which the mainstream press placed itself in
Todd,
a position
would you please mention
of
the book? Mention the name of it.
One Scandalous Story. Okay, an excellent day-by-day account of how the Star Office of the Investigative Council created a pattern of misleading impressions about the Clinton administration and Clinton's relation to Monica Lewinsky. Comparable books have been written about the Whitewater episode, which leads up to it. In both cases, the press was, to put it charitably, gullible when it came to Republican charges, whether about Clinton's corruption in a financial sense or in a sexual sense.
And what do you take from that, Todd Gitlin?
I think that the press was bending over backward to demonstrate its fidelity to some standard of objectivity, which in fact led it to be the creature of the Republican managers of fact, and to undermine those who had a more open and straightforward relation to fact. I think, in short, that they were bullied, they were had, and they don't own up to it. And one of the proofs of it is in the recent spate of reviews of Sidney Blumenthal's book, The Clinton Years, which contains, I haven't counted them, but there must be hundreds of pages of demonstration that the Whitewater tale, which led to the Star Committee, to the Star
investigation.
Mm-hmm. That the Whitewater story was about nothing. This obsession of the media and the various non-existent gates, travel gate and this gate and that gate, all of which were, if not fabricated, immensely exaggerated.
Yeah.
Such a thing. And George Bush goes AWOL in his time spent as a member of the Air National Guard in the 60s, and the news media are not interested in this. Now, if the explanation is not bending over backward to placate the right, what is the explanation, and why is it that the reviewers, including Joe Lelyveld, shamefully, who was himself responsible for this appalling coverage of Whitewater in the New York Times, in a review he should not have been assigned to do in the New York Review of Books, lambastes Blumenthal, never acknowledges the errors which Blumenthal points out in dozens of pages.
Todd Gitlin, are you making the media part of the vast right-wing conspiracy?
I'm making them fat-headed. I don't think that they are right-wing. I think that they are bullied by the right-wing. And the point was made by John Harris, an honest reporter for The Washington Post, in the early days of the George Bush administration, in a remarkable piece, not followed up anywhere, to my knowledge, in The Washington Post, to the effect that the difference between coverage of Bush and coverage of Clinton was that every day a reporter who was following Clinton woke up to a chain of phone calls, letters, emails, etc., from right-wing agitators insisting that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton were the devil's own happily married or unhappily married couple.
Marvin Cowell, pick that up. Todd Gitlin's calling the media complicit, servile, and most of all here, bullied, and bullied by the right. Do you see it?
No, I don't see it that way, no. But I have read Todd and heard Todd, and he's very consistent. This is his view. I appreciate his compliment of one scandalous story. But that is not the reason I wrote the book, and I'm not going to go into that now, although I'd love to. What happened was that with the impeachment story, my complaint with the media was not that they went along with right-wing pressure and all of that. My complaint with the media was that they didn't do what they were supposed to do. They're supposed to cover the news. And what they did was that they allowed themselves to just run after a juicy story for a lot of reasons, starting with competition and prizes and a whole range of other things. They refused to take on the solemn responsibility of doing legwork and finding out what really happened.
But you're not willing to generalize from that, Marvin Kalb?
They wrote without the knowledge.
But is that a dynamic that has infected the media more broadly, that infects it right now in the Bush administration? Is the media in total standing up and giving a penetrating enough view of reality, or allowing the White House to draw it first?
Tom, it depends very much on how we're going to define this, quote, media, a word I hate. Absolutely hate, for this very reason. There are many good newspapers in the United States and many, many first-rate reporters.
But if you put it all together, there's a net effect.
Can I just finish my sentence?
Yes, sure, Marvin.
All of these people are doing a very good job. We are obsessed as a people with cable television and talk radio, and we think that those two aspects of the, quote, media represent the news business, and they don't. They really don't. The news business is composed of very good reporters. They covered the war reasonably well. The embedded reporters did a very good job. I think that if you start with a point of view, you're going to find a story or two or 10 or 20 that will support your point of view. But I think you have to be fair. And I think a fair analysis of the overall newsmaking process would indicate that these people are not handmaidens of the Bush administration. Many of them are writing very good, tough copy. I mean, the piece that was in the New York Times about the way in which the Bush administration manipulate imagery in order to advance the president's political purpose, was that being hoodwinked by the White House or exposing them?
Marvin Kalb, let's hold it there. We've got to take a short break. We're talking tonight about news management in the Bush era, what we hear, what we don't, and why. You can join us. Is the news business independent, or an extension of the White House message machine? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about news management in the Bush era, what we hear, what we don't, and why. What's your assessment of the character and quality of the national conversation being supported by the news business today, by the White House? How would you describe the Bush administration approach to managing the news? My guests tonight are Marvin Kalb, senior fellow at the Shorenstein Center on the Press, Politics, and Public Policy, reporter for 30 years with CBS and NBC News. And joining us from New York, Todd Gitlin, professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University, author of Media Unlimited. You can join the conversation as well at 1-800-423-8255. Mark's calling from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd like to begin by saying first of all, that liberal media is an oxymoron because the media is owned by a very small number of huge corporations, which are by their very nature conservative. And they have allowed the Bush administration to function in the following manner. The Bush administration tenet is that if you tell a big enough lie long enough and loud enough, it becomes the truth. And when the media finds out what the truth is, they never bother to expose the truth and repeat the truth as long and loud as the lies are being told.
But, Mark, what about Marvin Kalb pointing to the stories that appear here and there and there and there and there that
well,
do point out what's going on?
Let me say this about that. These stories that I've been hearing about tonight never appear in the local newspapers of the vast majority of small towns across this country. I read three newspapers a day.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point.
I have seen almost none of it, and what I have seen has been buried in the third last paragraph of some story on the back page, so nobody sees it. We don't see it in the local news, and we never see it on the national news tonight.
So, Mark, your bottom line on the news flow that you as an American are getting?
I'm not getting any news is what it amounts to for the vast majority of things. I mean, it's horrible to hear these stories that have been exposed tonight and realize that I never heard it. I mean, President Clinton was impeached for a slap and tickle affair in the Oval Office, but Bush has created a war in Iraq on a fabric of lies. Nobody was hurt by Clinton, and yet probably a couple of hundred Americans and untold thousands of Iraqis will lose their lives based on the lies that were told by the Bush administration to get us into the war in the first place.
Mark, we've got it. Thanks for your call. Todd Gitlin, what about it? Mark points to the ownership of the media. You write in a recent piece, the sound emanating from network headquarters is the sound of suits walking on eggshells. Are you saying the same thing there? What?
I think ownership is one consideration. It's one factor. I don't think it's the only one. I would like to see evidence that newspapers and television stations that belong to bigger chains are more likely to be servile than those who aren't. I don't think it's that simple. It's certainly one consideration. I do think, to go back to the point Marvin was making before the break, that Elizabeth Buemiller did write this revealing article about the management policies of the White House. It's the first serious piece of reporting she's done since she went to work for the New York Times in the White House. I'm glad to see it. It took, I don't know, a year and a half. If the energy that went into the Whitewater reporting went into the reporting of how George Bush made his fortune, the Harkin oil story and so on. I don't know what we'd find, but I don't see the evidence that reporters are looking. You know, we still don't know to whom George Bush sold his shares. I'm not saying that I think corruption explains everything. I'm saying there was an unseemly zeal on the part of the White House when they licked their chops at the what they thought was the corruption of the Clinton administration.
The White House press corps, that is.
The White House press corps and the editors. I mean, it's not just the press corps. It's the editors who whipped them into a state of zealotry to find something on Clinton and the Clintons. And look, how much evidence do we need that the social world around Sally Quinn and her people in Washington despised the Clintons, resented the Clintons?
Yeah, we want to pull it up to date. If I may, Marvin Kalb, what about our caller Mark in Oshkosh saying, look, I'm sitting here in Oshkosh and I'm not getting the wonderful news flow that Marvin Kalb is talking about. Is that Mark's fault because he doesn't subscribe to the New York Times, or is that a problem in the American media, despite the fact you point out there's good reporting going on here and there? If in toto it doesn't go out to Oshkosh in a way that informs this citizen, isn't that a problem?
Well, of course it's a problem. I don't know the three papers that Mark reads on a regular basis. I would love to know which three. But he does listen to NPR. And it seems to me that NPR has provided some excellent news coverage of the war, of politics. Let me also leap to something that Todd was saying.
Yeah.
I wish, Todd, that journalists were more energetic. I wish that there was more legwork that went into the reporting. I wish that there were even more skepticism about some of the things that the White House says. But because there isn't enough doesn't mean that there's none.
Well,
there is a lot of the stuff that does go on. And when we talk about the media, we talk about something so large, so really undefinable, that it leaves Koppel and King in the same category.
But Marvin, Calvin,
really
but if there's not enough, doesn't that open the possibility that the White House message machine overwhelms what there is?
And it could. I'm not saying that is not the case on any given day. Maybe it is on some days.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only saying that since we on this program have to generalize, we are generalizing, I think, unfairly about, quote, the media. And we're also, I think, generalizing unfairly about the sort of the maliciousness with which this White House is being described, as if it is something significantly in its very nature different from other White Houses and their operations with respect to the media, with respect to projecting their policy on the American people and on the rest of the world.
Yeah, well, we've raised from the top of the hour the obvious fact that all White Houses have attempted to do this. And the question on the table tonight is simply whether we've come to a different level or not. An awful lot of people want to join this conversation. Let me turn to them. Galiel is calling from Marblehead. Hi, Galiel. You're on the air.
Yes. I have an enormous amount of respect for Marvin Cowell, but respectfully, I think he may have spent a bit too much time in the ivory tower, and his idea of journalism is more like journalism was when he was a reporter than it is today. The whole way that he's framed the argument, I think, is a bit disingenuous. I can tell you that most of us could really care less about rehashing the old arguments about the Clinton administration.
Mm.
And secondly, that we don't want to hear that there are opinion editorialists like Paul Krugman who are pointing out weaknesses in the administration story. The real issue for us is to hear the news. And the real issue for us is that when the president holds a press conference that is clearly rigged, there's no outrage in the press.
But what do you mean by rigged, Galiel? And what do you expect in a White House press conference?
No, I'm talking about the one, your guests know which one I'm talking about, the one where the president admitted that he had a list of reporters and all the questions were staged. And the questions were incredibly weak. That to me was a low point in the history of this country. And I grew up reading All the President's Men, and now I see journalists who are basically the essence of journalism is not to give people what they want. That's what the advertisers are about. The essence of journalism is to educate people about the truth. And the truth is an incredibly elusive thing, and the only way we can find out about what it is by relying on people who are trained to ferret it out.
Galiel, stand by. Marvin Kalb, can you respond?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the caller's right on target. I think that was a dreadful news conference. I think the press fell on its face.
Are we talking about the aircraft carrier or something else, Marvin?
Sorry?
Is this the aircraft carrier appearance or something else?
This was the one just before the aircraft carrier when the president called on specific reporters, did not call on Helen Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
He did something was really beyond the pale, in my judgment. And the press did criticize him for doing that. As a matter of fact, I think there may be something between that news conference and Ari Fleischer's departure. I can't prove that, though.
But we've got Galiel saying, hey, I'm really not satisfied. And Marvin Kalb, I don't have the equanimity about this that you appear to.
Well, equanimity is not – I want to be analytical. I want to try to analyze what the problem is. For all of us to sit back and simply blast George Bush as if he is not the president of the United States and thereby, in my judgment, deserving of respect, you can disagree with policy, but I think that people who are the president – deserve respect.
But that's the whole point. We're not here to blast George Bush, but to look at how the news media are covering.
Exactly. And I think that on a number of occasions, they've done a lousy job. But what I am saying, to be fair and overall, I have to give them a B+ to A-. Todd would be a tougher grader.
Mm. Galiel, what grade do you give?
The problem is that there are two media. There's the media that people who are educated and live in the major urban areas on the coast read, the New York Times and NPR, and then there's the mass media that the rest of the world gets. And the rest of the world is not hearing the other side of the story. Even here in Boston, the Boston Globe reported the charges about weapons of mass destruction in huge print on page one,
mm-hmm.
and then on page 27 was a little article about how we're withdrawing the investigators because we haven't found anything.
Mm.
That's not reporting the news. That's not educating the public.
Galileo,
we've
got it, and thanks for your call. Marvin, sorry.
No, no, absolutely right. That particular point was outrageous, and that is something that that I am positive good journalists are working on right now. We're going to be reading a lot more about that.
Todd Gitlin, there's an interesting dynamic being described here. I wonder if you agree that there's this kind of relatively small portion of Americans who may be getting a relatively good portion and share in quality of news. But a democracy works on a majority vote. And if that leaves too many Americans not well informed, where does that leave the democracy?
Well, in trouble, obviously. The reason I keep harping on Clinton is that it's not that every president gets the benefit of the doubt, gets the benefit of deferential treatment. The press corps did not accord Clinton that degree of honor.
So that's the distinction you're drawing between Clinton and Bush here.
Yes, and the fact, you know, Clinton could never have gotten away. You know, Clinton. When Clinton resorted to military action after the destruction of the American embassies in East Africa, and the Republicans went berserk in criticizing him as a trickster, the press joined in with an acrimonious questioning of Clinton. They did not assume that he was entitled to the benefit of the doubt as president.
Marvin Kalb, different standard in this administration?
There is a different standard. I don't know if it's a different standard. I go back to the way in which this administration, better than the Clinton administration, manages to control the environment. And one of the reasons they've been able to do that is 9/11. The president before 9/11 was a rather ordinary president, an accomplishment. After 9/11, he seized the moment in a way that the American people liked and continue to like, even though many of them have questions about his specific policies. They end up liking him.
The press was already deferential. The press was already nervous about the story of his desertion during his term as Air National Guard member. The press was already nervous about the story about how he got to make all his money. They were already in his pocket.
Marvin Kalb, we've just got a minute left.
I want that kind of terminology.
Marvin Kalb, I want to ask your advice for listeners who aren't satisfied with the news that they're getting. What do you suggest they do?
Well, it's going back to this question about what are the three newspapers that Mark reads. I would like to know what you read. What is it that you listen to? How do you make up your mind that you have information at all? How do you know whether you're being told the truth? This requires a great deal of work. It's not a lazy man's business to be a free citizen in a free society. It requires effort. And we're all, it seems to me, forgive me, just having a good time throwing epithets in one direction after another. And they all end up at the door of the White House. I think that policy making is much more complicated than that.
Marvin Kalb, with that, we're out of time. I think there's something more here than just epithets at the doorstep of the White House, but we won't get it all wrapped up tonight. We're grateful to you for coming on. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Marvin Kalb is senior fellow at the Shorenstein Center on Press, Politics, and Public Policy. And Todd Gitlin in New York, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Todd Gitlin is professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University. He's author of Media Unlimited, How the Torrent of Images and Sounds Overwhelms Our Lives. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by...